Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum, and Ryan's not here again for the second week. He's hanging out with his dad and playing some music, and we miss him, but we also have Bryce here. Bryce, welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Thanks for all your hard work, man.
Of course.
You see my face more than anybody.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We got a great guest for you this week. Boy, is it a really great guest.
It's a good episode.
It is. If you're here for Alan Richson, listen, I hope that if you love it enough, you'll say, I'm going to give this podcast a chance. This is a little podcast that with the patrons who support the podcast, patreon.com/insideofyou, our loyal listeners have kept this podcast afloat. And if you like this episode, I encourage you to just subscribe and listen. That's, you know, if I'm giving you some entertainment and you like it, give it a chance.
And if in some way you're here for Alan and you didn't hear his first appearance, listen after, because that's another one of the best episodes.
It really is. It really is. In this episode, I didn't think it could be any better. And he gets into some really important things that I was blown away by that makes me put bipolar in. It puts it in a different perspective because it really makes it, it was easily understood. He made it, put it in layman's terms. He uses a word like, it shouldn't be called bipolar, it should be called unipolar. Mm-hmm. And I just found it really interesting how he describes it.
Yeah, it was interesting hearing him talk about it with his family dynamic too, because he's not just a guy with bipolar, he's also a father and a husband. It's interesting.
Absolutely. If you want to follow us, which is important, at Inside You Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, at Inside You Pod on the Twitter, and you can watch these episodes on YouTube for the time being. And I encourage you again to join Patreon and support the podcast. There's so many perks. I write you little messages. I send packages of things. There's Zooms. There's YouTube Lives. There's with me where you ask questions for me. You get to ask questions on shit talking to guests. You get your name shouted out on each episode. A lot of perks, and you help out the show. I figure if you're getting Hulu for $14.99, you could be a patron.
Yep.
Right? For whatever, 99 cents.
For not $14.99.
$14.99. Boy, would that help. But there's all different patrons, so whatever you can do. Or just listen, honestly. Great episode, and you can go to my link tree. Lastly, before we get into this episode, on Instagram, at the Michael Rosenbaum. And it has everything. My Cameo, if you want to do Cameo, if you want to see what cons I'm going to, my live podcast with Kristen Ritter, Breaking Bad, Jessica Jones, Be in Apartment 23. She's my guest at a live podcast at the Regent Theater, January 24th, 7:30 p.m. or 7 p.m. Look at it on the Instagram link. And there's a meet and greet with me and Kristen and so much more. So get tickets. It will eventually sell out, I'm hoping. And that's that. And the Inside of You online store has a bunch of groovy stuff too. So without further ado, let's just get into it. Let's get inside of Alan Richson.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
First of all, it's a happy birthday. Your birthday's in a couple days here.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, thanks. Oh, that's sweet of you.
40 years old.
Thank you. I'm going to be 41.
41. So I'm 10 years older than you. A little over than 10 years.
Gross.
You're so fucking handsome. I mean, do you feel 41, or do you still feel like you're like in your 20s or 30s?
You know, I mean, no, dude. I've aged so much. Life has not necessarily. I mean, definitely, you know, I'm settling into a body that doesn't do things like it used to. In fact, I just put a post up on Instagram about a run that I went on where I was really wrestling with sort of the, just being content with what I'm able to do these days, you know? And part of that is because of age, but part of it is because of the size that I'm at now. You know, I used to run a lot, you know, but for a guy who in my 20s and early 30s, really, I would go rip like 13-mile runs just for the fun of it, around the hills of LA and like run really quick clips. I can't do that kind of stuff anymore. Like now it takes a lot of effort for me to run 4 or 5 miles, and it's painful and it leaves me sore for a couple of days. And, you know, that's age, you know, but yes. There's also, you know, there's also the life experience that I've had, and there's been so much of it. The work, the jobs that I've had, where life has taken me, the problems that, I faced at home and, at work. And it's all helped me really settle into this place where I'm like, you know what, I'm a middle-aged man now. And we've got to learn to take things slow. We've got to learn to accept other people's best. And that might be average, you know?
Yeah.
It's a conversation I have with my psychiatrist all the time. Average is hard. Average is hard. And I feel like I've been given a motor that burns above average, like at a speed that's too much for most people to handle. And a mind that kind of races at a pace that's like a lot faster. And so it's hard to slow down for people sometimes, you know, and go like, okay, let me let them figure this out. I've already thought about this. Learning, you know, like learning to be content and grateful for the gifts that I have and accept just all the people in my life and how different and diverse they are. It's just that is what, you know, I feel like a middle-aged man now.
Well, I'm
wrestling
51.
With all of this.
Yeah. I'm 51. This one comedian says, I think I've said this before, but he says, you know, they say 30 is the new 20. They say 40, 40 is the new 30. But when you 50, you just 50. No, nothing new about that shit. Only difference is you got to grab that railing when you.
Is that true?
You know, you said something.
You wear it real well, man. You wear it really well.
Well, look, this is happening the day after Thanksgiving, so I am just I'm like in a cloud, like all the food, and my friend made Jello shots, and I had some pot taffies, and I just had fun, and I karaoke'd.
So it is. So 50 is the new 20. There's really now it's coming full circle.
Well, 50 might be the new 20 last night. But the day after is 50 is the new 80 because that's how I feel. I feel like my neck, my back. Wasn't there a song? Yeah. My neck, my back.
Yes, my back.
We can't say it. Yeah, I didn't say it.
Kids watch.
But you said something important a second ago. You just said, you know, in layman's terms, it was something like you just do what you can. You do your best. You don't need to push yourself if you're in pain. Like, you know, that's what I got from it. I'm like, hey, you said like, whatever you can do is what you do. It's not about, oh, I have to be this guy. I have to be able to run 13 miles. It's like, hey, if it's a half a mile, a mile, I'm doing it. I'm feeling something. I'm going to go back. I'm going to home. I'm going to rest. I'm going to ice. I'm going to do whatever it takes to take care of yourself. I mean, I'm guessing that's what you do because you said something with your size.
Yeah, no, totally. Yes. I mean, there's like, you know, people talk about the power of now all the time, right? I mean, we've got the Eckhart Tolles of the world shouting from the rooftops that we should focus on the now, right? Well, what is the now? It's meeting ourselves where we are in that moment. And there we have to bring some compassion for ourselves. There's a lot of love in being willing to meet ourselves where we are. And, for the longest time, I would punish myself with the kind of abuse, like even in the gym where I go like, if I die on this treadmill, I've won. That was my mental philosophy working out. If I die doing this workout, I beat the game. Like I won. And there's no love in that. There's no love in that. So we've got to find the fine line between pushing ourselves to be better tomorrow than we are today, but we can get there by finding compassion for who we are and meeting ourselves at our best where we are right now, you know? So, that's important. And where I'm at right now physically, you know, I'm wearing a lot of weight for the role of Reacher.
How much do you weigh?
240.
Wait, 240 what?
Well, 240. I mean, I'm probably actually, you know, I've been working out pretty hard. I'm probably 245 now, but a little heavier now. But yeah, I'm that's a lot of weight, you know? So like for me to be running around the hills, not easy.
What hurts? What a big guys, You know, you got a lot of these guys like my friend Dave Bautista, and you got Jason Momoa, and you got, because I really put you on that. You're on that tier. To me, you're like, you're super talented and your comedic timing is amazing. So I'm like, you know, and I want to get into that. I want to get into your trajectory and all that. But in terms of like your size, like, is it really hard on certain parts of your body to be that big?
I think it's hard on the heart. You know, I mean, think about like, so there's a couple of things that I start to feel. It's the lung capacity feels like I just can't keep up, you know, like if I did sprints this morning, and it's just amazing how quick I'm like, oh, like really winded. And it wasn't always like that, but I'm trying to get a lot of oxygen to a lot of muscles. But, you know, I weigh 240 pounds and I'm, you know, if I'm climbing, there's some hills out here where I am, where I'll run these hills. If I'm climbing up a hill, it's a little bit like doing lunges for 20 minutes straight. I mean, for most people, throw 280 on your shoulders and do 20 minutes of lunges. Your muscles are going to explode. So I feel like when I'm running, I start to feel my muscles aching just because it's like, it's just, I'm pushing a lot of weight one step at a time, you know, without breaking. And you feel that. So it's tough. It's tough. You got to make adjustments when you're wearing this kind of size. And some of the guys you mentioned, like Momoa and all them, you know, he's got his out, you know, he's like a world-class rock climber, you know, so there's some activities that he does, like insane, like a spider monkey, you know, but I don't think he's out there running, you know, so I've got to make some, you know, we got to make adjustments for that kind of thing.
Do you think that there's a time in your life where you'll sort of, I mean, because to maintain that, and a lot of times you look at these guys and they're like, if they ever stop working out, well, they're probably going to be fat.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So
have you ever had a DEXA scan?
No. What is that?
Do you know what that, a DEXA scan is, a fancy new scan. It's a little bit like, it's kind of like laying in an MRI machine.
Oh, Pronuvo. You know, I did Pronuvo, where a body scan.
Right. And it'll tell you your muscular composition, your body fat composition. It tells you like, you'll know all your sizes measurements, but you'll also get your caloric values. So you're going to know exactly what you need to maintain your size. If you want to gain weight, how, you know, so for me, I'm just shy of 4,000 calories a day just to maintain. So, so if I stop working out for a little bit and I'm still on that, you know, I've trained my body to eat 4,000 calories a day, it would take me about 3 weeks to blow up, you know? So it does take a lot of consistency. I work out 5 days a week, you know, it's gotta be a lifestyle. But what we talked about last time, I think I mentioned last time we spoke, which by the way, I'm so grateful to have been a part of this once before.
Yeah.
I have so many people stop me, not about Reacher, not about Thad from Blue Mountain State, which I get a lot of, stop me just for the conversation that we had together on your podcast.
Me too.
And I think it really touched a lot of lives. And, I just think it's, you know, again, just to be, I'm grateful for what you do.
Thank you.
And grateful to be here again. But the last time we talked, I think I mentioned that I had just started taking testosterone. Wasn't that true?
I think so. I can't remember exactly,
so,
but maybe.
Yeah. So I had just started. So after season one, I'd broken my body, trying to build it up and trying to carry the schedule that we had. And I had a broken shoulder and I was taking a very powerful NSAID for that. And all of it together collectively just killed my testosterone. So I had to get on testosterone because my blood levels were non-existent. Since then, I still take testosterone. It has made life so much easier for me in my 40s to do the things that I need to do for my job, like keep weight on at 240 pounds of like solid muscle. So that's a big part of the secret. And I'm not going to lie about that.
No, you know?
I want people to know, because I want people in their 40s, 30, late 30s, early 40s to know this is a legitimate opportunity for us. Like we should, it's a, like a cheat code, but this is your body's, you know, this is your body's own material.
Yeah.
So just help it. You know what I mean? This is good stuff. You know, working with a doctor, get your blood. If your blood levels are fine, great. You don't need it. You know, there are side effects to be, you know, it's hard on some of the organs if you aren't careful.
What's a good
or
level?
Take too much.
What's a good level of testosterone? Like there's normal levels like up to like 1100 or whatever. Like what is,
yeah.
What's your level?
I think
the
numbers changed. I understand. The way I understand it, the numbers have evolved down. So I think it used to be between like 500 and 2,000 was like healthy levels. I think it shrunk a lot. I think now if you're like in the 1500 range, you're really high. But I think you want to be I think you want to be somewhere between like 500 and 1,000. And I'm sure some people will correct me, and I hope so. So we stay right at the upper end of that scale.
Right.
With my doctor, but it's made it so I don't have to put so much wear and tear on myself, in order to grow or develop or maintain, you know? So it's a big part of it.
Yeah. And I want to add to the conversation that we had, because it was unexpected. It was one of those things where you and I are talking in the first conversation, and then you open up about how, you know, you almost tried to end your life. And I was shocked, taken aback, and also I felt this wave of just appreciation, admiration, and boy, do people come up to me as well and tell me how much they were affected by it. And a lot of people don't open up, and I it's not a prerequisite to come on the podcast that you have to just get, you know, throw everything out, but you're that kind of guy. You're that, you know, since I've known you, you're just sort of, this is me, and I'm flawed, and, you know, we all make mistakes, and we all have dark times in our lives, but I got through it.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
I got through it, and you speak so openly about it that I, you know, when people ask me what's your favorite podcast episode, this has got to be up there. I've done over 300, and I'm like, this is certainly, you know,
which shows how much pain we're all in, right? Yes. Like how much we all suffer to figure out how to make this work, you know, or how to, you know, create the least amount of trouble for other people, or however we go about thinking about our escapism, our wishes, our fantasies, our sins, like whatever it is that we get into, you know, we're all really struggling to figure it out. And to withhold the truth about what I've experienced, I think would be living a huge lie. And I think would be missing the entire purpose of life, which is for us to figure out how to enjoy this together, you know, to connect with one another. And that's not my like natural disposition. Like I'm like a really reserved person in life, you know? And it's odd because you chose a career where you like way out front in front of a lot of people, but that I was just an opportunist to go like, oh, I really do enjoy. I really love what I do. I love being on set in front of the camera, figuring out how to master this character or story. I could completely do it in isolation. If I could take care of my family with a living, I could do it in isolation where nobody sees it, and I'd be just as happy. I don't like the fame. The fame aspect is super toxic, man. And so I don't like that. But I will use it if it will bring us closer together, if it will help us heal, if it will help us feel safe or like understood or less alone. And I think, you know, I don't want to talk about it any more than anybody else does, but like I have to make myself uncomfortable and go there. Because nobody's going to connect with me over like money and be like, you know, like, oh, look at how much money I'm making, dude. I'm doing so good. Like everything's so great. I got a family. I got this. I just bought a PS5. Like nobody's going to be like, I feel so seen.
Yeah.
Know? That's not what we connect over. We connect through our pain. Truly. If we really want to, we have to connect through our pain, and no one's going to start that conversation for us. We have to be the one to start it. in our personal lives, we have to be willing to have deeper conversations where we go, you know, man, I've been through some really tough times. Here's what I've learned. And then somebody goes, me too. That's where you know, we crave the deep connection. People talk all the time about it. We're so torn apart. We're so divided. Our country will never be the same. Man, it starts with us in these little conversations that are honest.
Yeah. You know, last night, and this is airing a little later, but it was Thanksgiving and I told you that, but it was the first time every year we go around and say what we're thankful for. And there was 27, 28 people over my house and we're in the back and I said, everybody come on. And it was hard to gather them. And they're like, no, come on. We're doing this. We do this every year. We're going to do it. We're going to be thankful. You know, Farley-esque. And I,
Farley.
And I had everybody go around and talk. And I never do this, but I went to each person and said what I'm thankful for. I've never done that. But we went around and at least five people opened up and were crying, which a lot of people start crying about, you know, my friend Alex lost her dad recently. You know, there was all these stories and it was just so beautiful to see because everybody's like, oh, I just want to say I'm thankful for this. And thanks Michael for being here. It just felt, real. It's just vulnerable and raw, and as much fun as we were having and all these things, it was just a great moment. And I love to see when people can be so just true, not only to themselves, but in front of others. And it was a beautiful thing. Man,
it takes so much courage. It takes so much bravery to discuss even the simplest pains. And you leave feeling like you know them better, right? Like now you really know them, you know? We know the thing that's behind a lot of their motives, to be kind, you know, to be quick-witted, to be short-tempered, whatever it is. Like, you know, once we start to know people's pain, we really start to know them. And now we can understand, and now empathy can enter in, and all of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's our responsibility to be, like you did, to foster that conversation, you know?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was truly awesome. You know, good for you. I want to, we can get into all this stuff again, but so your publicist sent me the screener for Reacher. And I love the first season and I love the world that it's in. And it's like, and I'm not, I mean, I want to toot your horn because that didn't sound right. That didn't sound right.
That's fine. I'm with it. You can.
But you are the glue. Everyone around you is all great. But like, it's so fun to watch you. I'm waiting for your little smart ass remarks, your little subtle things, but like, even in this first episode, which airs December 10th on Amazon, is that right?
December 15th, I think.
December 15th. Yeah. Okay. And you don't need to tell people to watch it because they're going to watch it. I just felt like another gripping story. You're watching it all come together. And there's this twist at the end where you're just like going, oh, now I know what we're in store for the rest of the season. And and by the way, my friend Joe's out there with my dogs helping me out today. And he's also a fan. So it's like, it's pretty cool when around me, all my friends are fans of the show. But it's you. It's like this is like the perfect role for you. And it's you're the badass. You have heart. You're a vigilante. I mean, you do good things, like, you know, the old woman at the ATM. And there's a weird thing because you're not being too sappy or you're doing something like, you know, that's right. That you know it's right.
Right.
You're taking care of business, but you're still in your own. It's I really love your character. I think it's so good. And that's why I said Jason Momoa and Dave Bautista, you can be doing all the things that they're doing. You will have the movie career because you have that. And that's a charm. And that's something I believe that's innate and something that you just have, that you've always had inside of you, but now you've gotten to do a role where you're not just the asshole, you know, this guy doing this. Now you're playing a dynamic character that you just shine, and you don't even have, it seems like you're not even trying, which I love. You're not overdoing it, which could easily be done and turn viewers off. Your character stays
true
to himself.
I mean, he's also, you know, it's a dangerous character because he's so stoic and in his own head, you know, his mind working like a computer all the time. And he's so kind of emotionally unavailable compared to most human beings. It could leave, my big fear was that I would not be able to create an interesting character for the screen, that people would be like bored out of their mind watching the show because this guy's not charismatic or interesting enough, because there's physically, externally, there's not a lot going on until there's an explosion of action that we kind of look forward to. But really, he's a rather still character externally. And I'm glad to hear you say that you enjoy watching him so much and you feel those layers that are going on, you know. But it really is a dream role. And it's one of those that I just sometimes I do sit back and think, like, I am so lucky that this role found me and I get to play a role I feel like I was truly born to play, you know. There are others, you know, there's a lot of scripts that we're a part of and attached to right now that are characters nothing like Reacher that I cannot wait to explore and showcase. But this one I think will always be, like, you know, just the cornerstone of my career.
Yeah, and I think that I know for a fact that we talked about, you know, you just mentioned it, your shoulder, you were exhausted, you were doing all these things, you were stressed out of your mind the first season, and it was just like, I remember talking to you at a con or something, you're like, dude, I don't know if I could I don't know if I could do this. I mean, this is
genuinely
like, holy shit. What changed from the first season, the second season where
The sex season was a lot more laid back.
Yeah,
laid
a little back. More sexy. But what changed in the second season where
a lot. I mean, look, I have a great team around me, and you know, you mentioned you mentioned really enjoying the story and the show and the character and his mannerisms and that, like, the witty, like, smartass remark he makes that kind of you're waiting for him to tell his honest truth. And those things that you're enjoying, you're really enjoying the minds of the creative team that's around me. Nick Santora, the showrunner, who does an unbelievable job bringing the Reacher to life that we know and love in the books. And it's difficult adapting that to TV, and he knows just how to do it. And I'm fed by him. You know, and Don Granger at Skydance and Dana Goldberg at Skydance, all the executive partners that are, like, really making sure we're picking the right books and all the, you know, adapting it well for TV. Sam Hill, our producing director. You know, there are people around us that people cannot appreciate the way that I appreciate them, that are making Reacher what it is for people to enjoy. That has to be said. So there's that. But we all collectively have figured out things that worked and didn't work about the first season and have pivoted. And also the pressure of the season, going into season one, where everybody was like, let me whisper to you what Reacher would do in this moment. And then getting that from 20 people at every take, it was exhausting.
Frustrating.
And it was necessary. But I don't have that, because once the season came out, everybody goes, we found it. And now there's this, like, just this level of enjoyment, you know, where that pressure is gone. And now it's sort of like, we get to enjoy seeing what Reacher would do in these situations as we make this thing together. The pressure of, like, are you Reacher? Are we telling, showcasing the right image for Reacher, the tone, the personality, the voice, the mannerisms, like, are we making Reacher come to life on screen, has been solved, you know. We're confidently settled into who this is, and I understand this character now and what, you know. So it's just made it a really enjoyable process now.
Well, it seems like a lot of the stress, like you just said, came from uncertainty. It came from, did you go home at night sometimes and going, I don't know if I'm giving them what they want. I don't know if this is the guy. I don't know what I'm. Did you carry a lot of the stress, a lot of the weight on you? No pun intended.
Man, I always felt like at the end of the day, because I worked so hard. People have no idea, dude. I set up entirely new methods for how I can learn scenes so that I could learn everybody's line, including mine. Mm. So I would learn not just my lines, I would learn everybody else's. And by knowing the scene that well, it gave me the opportunity to have 20 people tell me how they want me to do the scene and to pivot and do it that way. So I left so many options on the table season one. There was no question about, like, did I get the right Reacher? I knew there was some version of Reacher there. You just had to take your pick, you know? And that came from the work. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't so much that. It was just the sheer the workload that it took to be able to honor that necessity, you know, it was a lot. That part of the process is gone now, you know, so now I can approach it much more like any other project or film, you know, and that's it just helps, you know.
Yeah. What about the family, like your family? You still live in Florida?
No, I just sold my place in Florida. Yeah.
All right, so you're gone.
Yeah, gone from Florida. I mean, look, here's the thing. Since Reacher came out, there was this moment, you know, I fought really hard for Reacher. It took months and months and months to convince everybody that I was the guy. You know, I was passed on the first time, I think I mentioned to you, maybe last. Yep. I was passed on in the very beginning of the process, like everybody was. And I think that was because I'm 6'3", Reacher 6'5". I think they were trying to, you know, everybody's trying to get a super authentic version of Reacher on screen. And so there's always kind of an asterisk in my mind, you know, when it comes to this role. But I had to really fight for that. And now that we're in it, it's exploded. Like, the career's exploded because of what happened after Reacher aired. Beforehand, we were waiting. The whole town was like, let's see what happens when it airs. There was months of silence. Nobody was picking up the phone. There was no conversations about scripts. It aired, and within 48 hours, I had 20 offers on my desk from the biggest producers and studios in town. And it hasn't slowed up. I mean, it's still, like, every day we're getting phone calls from some of the most legendary people you can imagine.
Give me one.
So I did a movie. Okay. So I did a movie with Jerry Bruckheimer produced, Guy Ritchie directed, called Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. This is a movie I did for Lionsgate Domestic and Amazon International. So some partners that I knew and have relationships with on this, and some new relationships formed. This movie is so good. This movie is so fun. There's nothing like it. It's like Guy Ritchie at his best, based on a true story. This World War II heroes who were essentially the first special ops. It's told in Guy Ritchie style.
Wow.
It's super cool. I just went into that feeling very lucky to be a part of this cast, you know, Henry Cavill and Alex Pettifer and, you know, Henry, just a great, amazing cast. Jerry Bruckheimer calls because he saw the movie just a few days ago. He saw a cut of the film, and, you know, he said, we have to do something together, like with you out front.
Come on. I know Jerry a long time. I'm buddies with him, name drop, but Jerry, for Jerry to call someone, to call
an, do you know how, like a high adventure, like, nobody does high adventure better than this guy.
No.
And it's the toughest genre to make, I think. And, you know, for him to call, you know, one of the most legendary producers of all time, you know, you get those kind of calls. It's like, there's just no better feeling, you know? And it's because of Reacher that those kind of calls are coming in. I wouldn't have done that job if my career had been fueled by Reacher.
And Jerry is like the kind of guy, he's so soft spoken. He's so intimidating, but such a sweet guy. But he's just like, and you, when you meet him, I remember the first time, because I was in this hockey league. I'm still in the hockey league. And it was Jerry Bruckheimer Hockey League on Sunday nights. And I've done it for 25 years. And it's producers and actors and, like, you know, Kiefer Sutherland and a bunch of, you know, and then pro players would play, and it was competitive and fun. You know, the first time I go, Jerry, hey, thanks for having me. He was like, you know, he just nodded. And then a few months later, I'd be like, hey, Jerry. He's like, how are you? And then a year later, 2 years, 3 years, was like, hey, Michael. He knows my name.
Warming up
4 years. Hey, Michael, you know, conversations. And slowly I built this little friendship with Jerry, and, you know, where we'd go and he'd go, you know, if you'd like to fly with us in my private jet to Vegas, I'm like, yeah. He goes, would you MC the event? And so, like, I'm like, for Jerry to call you, you guys don't understand. Jerry Bruckheimer is not someone who just – throws out compliments and throws out, like, for him to say, and I want to work with you. We're going to do something else. We're going to, I mean, good for you. Good for you.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks.
I think that's an awesome. It's a dream. I'm so happy because I know how hard you worked. I mean, I saw all the shows. Even Smallville was like one of the beginning things. And then all the little guest stars you did, and even up to like Supergirl and Titan or Legends of Tomorrow and all these other things you did. It's like you work and you work and you know that you believe in yourself and you go, I'm bigger than what I'm being offered. I'm bigger than this. And you know it. And the people who represent you know it, but you're like, no, you don't understand it. I've had those feelings. And then when you suddenly get validated, for me, it's like, it's almost like your dad who never says anything, says, hey, I'm proud of you. It's like, it just validates everything you've been thinking. And it's a beautiful thing. And it's well-deserved.
It is a, thank you. But you know what's funny?
Clowns, Buddy
it
Hackett.
It is a beautiful thing. I am, you're hilarious. You know, the secret to getting to that place for me was realizing I am bigger than my career, not in an egotistical way, but right, I am more than just my career. I had this, we may have dabbled in this last time we spoke, but I had this moment of existential crisis where I had to ask myself honest questions about who I was and where my identity lied in my life. And at the time, it was in ambitions. It was in material things. I had been making a lot of money and I was surrounding myself with things that made me feel like, you know, created the illusion of success, success in the world's eyes. And my career was my fixation. And it was when I decided I'm more than my career. What if my career were to disappear tomorrow? It happens to people all the time in our business. You're like, what happened to that guy? They were the one, they were the star. They were out front and now they're what? Like working at Starbucks, nothing wrong with that. You know, but like they disappear from in front of the lens and suddenly you're like, what are they worth now? You know, we are much more than our careers. We are so much more than our careers. We sell ourselves so short when we settle into a job and say, like, this is who I am right now. And maybe someday, you know, maybe we have a dream that someday we'll have an identity that's a little bigger. Maybe I'll be a painter. Someday I'll have my own gallery and that's what I'll be. We're more than that. We are more than our art. We're more than our highest ambitions for our most creative self. Like I think we are spiritual beings and that we should be thinking about like higher minded things. You know, that's what love is, man. It's this thing that floats above the whole world and says like, how can I actually serve this place and these people that don't really want to be served and that don't serve me? You know, and when we start thinking that maybe that's who I am, my highest self is that guy. Oh, so hard to meet that person, so hard to be that person, and so worth struggling to be that. And suddenly I'm not thinking about my career. And when I stop thinking about my career and thinking about how I can advance myself, it exploded, dude. It exploded. I swear to God, I was like, I started doing these little Insta church videos that were more for me because they ground me. We all know that when you teach a subject is when you truly know if you understand it and it helps you cement your understanding of it. And so for me, it's a practice of like, do I know this subject? Does it make sense to me? Can I explain it to somebody? And also sharing ideas that I think are fun to talk about that nobody does because they're not commercial. But I started doing that. And I told my wife before I posted the first video, I said, I want to make sure you're okay with me never working again in the business. Like if I have to be a plumber or something to make ends meet, because I have a feeling if I start posting these videos, people are going to think I'm some kind of nut job and I'm never going to work again. And she's like, I'm with you, you know, and like, this is you being honest and authentic. And I, you know, I like what you have to say and go for it. You know? And so I had her support and I was like, all right, I'm never going to work again. and it was entering this space through that honest, authentic place of like, of eschewing an identity that was wrapped in career, that then the career takes off. It's the most bizarre thing that life does for us when we let go of what doesn't matter, you know, and that's been my experience.
You know, hey guys, I'm doing another live podcast downtown LA at the Regent Theater, and my special guest for January 24th is Kristen Ritter, Breaking Bad, Jessica Jones. This is going to be a sold-out event. I know it. It's going to be exciting, and there's a meet and greet and so much fun that's going to happen January 24th, so make sure you get tickets as soon as possible. Downtown Los Angeles at the Regent, inside of you with Michael Rosenbaum, with special guest Kristen Ritter. I'm so excited. On a similar level, I do feel like, you know, because my whole life I was, you know, not my whole life, but since high school, theater and college and plays and off-Broadway and movies and TV. And I got to a certain point where I'm just like, something's missing. I've been chasing this and I've had great success and I'm very grateful, but I'm still empty. And why is that? It doesn't make sense. Like, people look at you and you're right. They, you know, you have a little money, you have nice things, you have good friends, you have a career. Why? What is it?
Right.
And that's doing the work, and that's working right on yourself, and which I have done, but also obviously learning to love yourself, which we talk about a lot, which is very right difficult, because, you know, if you grow up not feeling loved and not feeling like you are worthy or good enough, right, then how,
or you
the
have
hell,
to earn it.
How the yeah hell? So you have to stop and go, hey, I can't blame this anymore. What is the issue? How do we fix this? And when I started doing things, and this wasn't that long ago, I took a little break from acting for a while, and I did like a little, you know, like, you know, some things, but I thought, try doing things that you really like, that you really yeah love doing,
yeah,
passions. And all of a sudden, yeah, in the last year or two, these passions have turned into things inadvertently.
Oh, that's great. Yeah,
you know, it's yeah like, I go, I always wanted to write a kid's book. I so sold good it, and it's going to be out. And I'm like, you know, I really want to do this.
You,
fun,
man.
You know, I want to do this, oh, wow, fun thing. And by the way, it's the first time in my life that the process is just as fun as the outcome, if not more. I'm the process. Oh, yeah. I'm, because I used to be like, okay, 14-hour day today. Oh, what time is it? It's okay, I only have 6 hours left. I am just enjoying the moments, and whether something amazing happens financially or whatever, I'm doing them because I enjoy them. You know, I came
that's
out.
The icing yeah on the cake. Yeah,
it's amazing. 100%. It's an amazing feeling.
That's when you know you're being true to yourself. When you're being true to yourself, the process is the enjoyable part, because the life is the process. Then life is working, right? It
yeah
feels right because you're being true to yourself. That's big, man.
It is.
That's like 50-year-old wisdom right there.
Dude, it's taken me so long. And look, I have a long way to go. But now, and I'm trying to do things like say no. If you just don't yeah want to do something, if it's fear-based, that's a different story. But if you don't want to do it because you're like, there's just not an element of fun in that, or there's not something
right
that I can have passion for, then don't do it, unless you have to do
right
it, you know,
right,
to pay the bills or whatever. But I'm starting to just relax a little more. I'm starting to not get anxious about every fucking thing. It's look, I'm on a better path, and because I was on a dark path like you, I hit rock bottom and I went to a treatment center for 3 weeks, and I just started opening up and talking about life, and it, boy, did it turn me around. It wasn't like holy shit, but it was like I faced a lot of things that I'd never faced, and that's what life is. Life is, it's a journey, and I'm happy that I finally see the light. I finally see doing enjoyable things that are things that I'm passionate about. So I it's amazing when you're right. When you stop trying so hard and you stop thinking that I get this part, my agent's going to be happy. Everybody's going to be happy. I'm going to be, look at me, look at me. But then it's then, well, now you have to do the work. So you're doing it, or who are you doing it for? What are you doing it for? Admiration, right. Adoration. But when you can do something and go, I want to do this, and I'm probably not going to get any adoration for this. Who cares? I want to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a fart book.
Yeah. A fart book is good. We need more fart books.
Yeah. And so I think that's a beautiful thing. And it's nice to see that you've come around, because you've had more struggles than most people, if not all the people that I've interviewed. I mean, and you also talk openly about bipolar, right?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. Bipolar is a funny thing. Bipolar is a terrible name for bipolar.
What should it be called?
It's a terrible name. Unipolar. It should be called unipolar. Everybody else is bipolar. So if normal, healthy people have an experience throughout the day, right? They're coming home from work. They had a decent day at work. They work hard. They feel accomplished. They're driving home. Somebody cuts them off in traffic real bad, gives them the finger. Don't even understand why. I'm going the speed limit, right? They feel put off and they're like, how dare they? Like, that's so rude. People in LA are so rude. They have this feeling that's like negative towards that experience, and maybe, you know, opens up feelings of like insecurity or rage or whatever. But they're still sort of in that place where they're like, but I'm going home. Oh, well, I can shake it off. And I'm going to, they're existing in two places at once. They can exist. Most people can exist in two places at once. Like, if shit happens, there's still some part of themselves that's okay. With bipolar, I personally cannot experience two states at once. It is one of the most intense versions of that experience that you can possibly imagine. So if most people have 99 keys on the keyboard and the lows are real low and the highs are real high and they can enjoy all those, right? And we can sort of play in that range. For me, it extends as far as the eye can see, deep into the horizon where it curves and wraps around the edge of the earth, right? Those keys still go. Some of those are so deep that it's impossible to pull yourself out of. And you need help from a team of people. You need medication, right? But I can't possibly experience those extremes and also do what people tell you to go. They go, but just think about all the things you have to be grateful for. Play this key up here. Just play that key. Let it pull you out. No, dude. There's no just playing that key. Until life stops hammering that bass tone for me, I can't come out of it. And there are times when I have this kind of out-of-body experience where I go, I should let go of this feeling. Like, I have to let go of this feeling. My family needs me. I need to be present with my family. There's got to be a way out. It's like I'm talking to myself going like, please. And it just won't, dude. That is bipolar. That's bipolar. It's unipolar. It's you are going to experience immediately the most intense version of whatever your experience is. And it's authentic and there's no lying about it. It's so complex and deep, those feelings, that I can't act like I'm not feeling it. And so that's really hard for people. And it's really hard for my family. Because like, if I'm upset because of my kid the other day, okay, so I've got three boys, they're 11, 9, and 7. My 7-year-old's just a few days behind me, his birthday, so he's about to be 8. They're very sweet boys. I'm so grateful for them. They're wonderful young men. But they were mad at me because I told them to go to bed and put their stuff away, the stuff that they were doing, and my littlest said, F you, Dad. I had had quite a day. Because I was out in the countryside for work at a place with no Wi-Fi, and I had press stuff. I was talking to Associated Press, and I was talking to Washington Post, and all these things that were supposed to be on camera, these interviews, and I couldn't get a signal, dude, and it was so frustrating. So I'm dealing with that. And then my kid tells me to F off because I asked him to go to bed, and I like lose my mind. Right. And I can't pull myself out of that place to go like, he's just a kid. I experienced the feeling of a kid telling me to F off, and that feeling took over and there was nothing else for like an hour. And it took me like an hour to finally kind of like take it off, dude. It's fucking the worst. It is fucking the worst.
So what is it?
I would give anything. Yeah. I would give anything to not be bipolar. But yet it's also the fuel to what I do in my craft. I can experience things as a character because I can tap into such wide-ranging emotions so deeply and authentically so fast. It's what makes things like Reacher interesting for you to watch. So it's a blessing and a massive fucking curse, dude. I'd give anything to not be bipolar.
Wow. No one's ever put that in perspective. And I just was, that is so gripping. And so I understand. It's like the motherfucker just cut me off. I'm going to fucking, dude, you could have a gun. Come on. You're not that guy. You're too old for this shit. I have that voice. I'm going to go fucking talk to that guy.
He could shoot you.
So when you get upset, you just kind of like, do you catch yourself going, no, you never talk to me like that again. And then you're.
Yeah. You know, that's what you need. So as a bipolar person, I need resolution. I have to have resolution because I can't just leave things on the table. Like, that's why I talk to, dude, I have so many hard conversations with the producers I work with the creative teams I work with executives at studios that I work with. Like, these are corporate executives that are not used to like an actor calling and being like, I need to have an honest conversation with you about this process. This is not working. And let me tell you exactly why. It's making me hate life right now, you know, and you sort of like, we need to find a different process. I have to have those conversations because I cannot be free of that terrible toxic feeling that is attached to the anger or whatever, the contempt, until we figured it out. Like, it doesn't just go away. It lives burning hot until, you know, until it's figured out, until it's figured out. And, you know, the highs are also dangerous. You know, it's dangerous to like live in those highs for too long. You know, you start to get, you know, they call it delusions of grandeur. You know, you start living in this place where you start feeling invincible and making terrible financial decisions or whatever, because you feel, you know, it's dangerous on either side. We don't want to be like, we want to be fluid, and it makes it very, very hard to do that. And so one of the fixes is having very difficult, honest conversations to find resolution that doesn't even make sense for most people. They're like, why do we have to talk about this? Let's just let it go.
Yeah.
I can't just let it go.
Right. Let me just ask you this briefly. We can move on, but because this is just fascinating. Is it, because no one's put it in perspective like this. Sean Astin talked about his mother, and people have talked about it, but no one's ever really made it like in layman's terms. That really just really resonates with me. Is it something someone could tell you, hey, you're having an episode, or hey, you're being this? It's like, you see what you're doing right now. Can you control this? Has anyone ever said that? Does your wife ever do that?
Yeah, it's usually not like with such confidence, like, hey, you're having a moment right now. It's usually a question. Are you taking your medication right now? And which also sets me into a spiral. Like, I hate being asked that, you know, sometimes I've stopped, but okay. So for bipolar, there is a list of symptoms. And you are in an episode, usually, you know, hypomania, mixed episodes are more common. But if you're in an episode, I think you have to have four of these coexisting, this confluence of symptoms happening at any one time. You can be in a bad mood, or you can be irritable, or you can have reckless spending, or you can be you can be kind of having insomnia. All those things that are telltale signs of mania, they can be happening. I had a really hard time sleeping two nights ago, and it's concerning. That's a big red flag, man. When I stop sleeping for no reason, that usually is a sign that mania is on the way. And for it to truly be a manic episode, it has to be a confluence of these things. So what we have now is a list that I also have a psychiatrist that gets eyes on me once a week. You know, and that's a really important thing. She can see sometimes my speech is it's not the same. It's much quicker or more clipped, or my ideas or thoughts are much more, you know, I'm like hopping lily pads to different thoughts or ideas. And, you know, she knows how to see all the signs. She's a bipolar expert. So, you know, yes, those questions come, but usually it's about like, how many other things right now do we think might be happening? One of the weirdest, you want to know one of the weirdest things that is a symptom for me of mania? If I wake up one day and like three pairs of shoes show up from like Amazon, you know, like boxes show up on my doorstep, I know that I'm, we're well into a mixed episode.
Yeah.
It is bizarre, dude. I have thousands of shoes. And I, the other day, we've gotten really good at recognizing, oh, that's actually, this is mania. I don't even know why. Dude, I didn't even know I bought shoes the other day, but I woke up. I must have been up at night, transfixed. Hyperfixation is a thing, right? So hyperfixated on shoes, bought a bunch of shoes. I woke up and it was like on my phone, right? And so I was like horrified because I was like, oh God, I bought like three of the same shoes.
So you don't even remember it?
No, I didn't even remember it. The only proof I had was the receipt being open on my thing. And so I told my wife, I was like, I think I'm manic. And I got my doctor on the phone and we started talking about all the other things. And she was like, you're for sure into a mixed episode right now. And so we talked about upping my medication a little bit. I'm on Abilify. And it helps.
By the way, what milligram? What milligram of that?
Well, I'm super sensitive, like unusually sensitive to medicine. So a little bit affects me. Like the very first time I took it, it was like an introductory baby dose. And I was like drooling on myself. And I swore I would never take it again. I was like this, like, you want to kill me? To my wife, you want me dead? And she's like, no, we don't. We just want to help you. Like, I'm never taking this again. And then so I was like, I am never taking that medicine again, to my psychiatrist. And we went like 3 or 4 weeks where she was like, okay, we'll find something. I started to have a real manic episode. And she was like, I think I just please try it. And so I took it again, but during a manic episode. And I was like, oh, okay. I feel totally normal now. It worked. I just took it at the wrong time. And we eased into it that way. And so it's a small, it's one pill. It's 1 2-milligram pill is enough for me to sort of like,
wow,
you know, and we would increase if things are like really going haywire, would increase. And it was just, but since having eyes on this, since working with a psychiatrist who recognizes those symptoms, since reading a million books and being very open about it with my wife, we've learned to see the signs, and it's a language, and we started to speak the language. And so when, you know, we can approach it in a very different way where we go like, I think we actually need to have a conversation about maybe upping the medication right now and just pulling it in, you know?
I love it.
So it's helped a lot. I think, you know, I hate the idea of sitting in front of psychiatrists and being like, you know, just gets her magnifying glass out and like puts me under a microscope. Like I get enough people looking at me and touching me. I walk in the mall and like people are like whispering and I don't want people looking at me anymore. And I willingly subject myself to somebody going, let me look at your eyes right now. You know, I don't want to do that, but you know how important it is. And it's saving my life. It is saving my marriage. It's saving, like, it's worth it. So anybody out there who's like, I don't want to do that. It's long, like, if my life fell apart, which I could burn it to the ground real easily, and I've tried so many times, it would not, then I would be begging to go back in time and work with a psychiatrist who puts me on a microscope for an hour a week. You know, I just want to encourage people who are out there that maybe have some of the trademark symptoms or signs or are in danger of that kind of thing. Before you burn the house down, like, you know, just get a team around you that can help you recognize these things and work with it.
Or in general, go to therapy in general. I think therapy for people in general, if you're going through anything, you know, just having someone to talk to and bounce. I've talked about that a million times. All right, this is thank you so much for opening up. This is this last 20 minutes is just, I'm so engaged that I could talk to you forever, and I'll bug you in another year when season 3 comes out. This is so good. I just, you know, hearing you open up about this stuff. So Jack Reacher, Amazon Prime, December 15th, season 2. I got to watch the first episode. And let me tell you something, you're going to love it. He is more charming. There's a new story, which I love. A great twist at the end. Some real good ass beatings. Some heart.
That's true.
You know, I have no doubt this is going to be a bigger success than last year. I'm so proud of you. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
And I'm proud of you for more than all the, you know, accolades and the jobs and all this, that you're just authentic you, and you're working on doing all these things. I could see you're always working on being a better husband, a better father, a better friend, so, you know, it's giving giving me this time with you is I'm forever grateful, and I appreciate it. I hope you come back. And
thanks, man. I can't wait to do it again soon, man. I love talking to you, and again, grateful to share this conversation with you in front of your audience. I look for opportunities to open up, and it's hard, and you've given me one, so I'm thank you.
All right, love you, buddy. Thanks. Jack Reacher,
too,
December 15th. Make sure you watch it. I can't wait.
Please watch.
Love it. Love him. Alan, you're a damn gem. I thank you for coming on the podcast, taking your time. You're a machine, my friend. You're an honest, loyal machine.
He's jacked. He's like a mountain of a man.
His arm can fit in my torso. Kind of visualize that.
I don't want to.
I don't know what that even means. Yeah, what? But thank you for being so humble and open and charming and super talented. So there you go. Yeah, he's just an awesome guy. I mean, I'd say this is easily top 10 episodes of all time. Like him as a guest. I mean,
definitely. And I told you what I love, I've
done 300.
Is hearing guests talk about previous appearances and being noted for that. And it's not just like, hey, Alan, I loved you from Blue Mountain State. It's like, hey, I heard you on Inside of You.
Yeah.
It really helped me. Like, oh, that's rad.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. I think it's just fantastic. And if you missed out on all the things I'm saying about the podcast and all that and what it did, just go to the intro and listen to it. It's very quick and educational. And thanks for listening. And again, if you like this episode, please follow us and please support us and listen to more episodes. A lot of times you think you're listening to one episode. Oh, I don't know this actor. I'm not going to listen. But you learn so much from different people. And it's an
education.
There
are a lot of good ones this year.
Yeah, we've had a great year. Knock on wood. And thank you, Westwood One, for all the hard work and getting us sponsors and also keeping us afloat with the patrons. We do appreciate you. Teresa, Brittany. You guys rock. I don't think they're listening, but anyway, there we go. Now it's time for the top tiers. These are the top tier patrons. And here we go. Patreon.com/insideofyou. Nancy D, Leah and Kristen, Little Lisa, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Nico P, Robert B, Jason W, Sophie M, Raj C, Joshua D, Jennifer N, Stacy L, Jamal F, Janelle B, Mike E, Eldon Supremo, 99 more, Santiago M, Chad W, Leanne P, Maddie S, Belinda N, Dave H, Dave Hall. I love my Dave Hall. Sheila G, Brad D, Ray Harada, Sabitha T, Tom N, Talia M, Betsy D, Rhiannon C, Corey K, Dev Nexon, Michelle A, Jeremy C, Brandy D, Joey M, Eugene and Leah, Corey, Angela F, Mel S, Christine S. Go ahead, read a couple.
Eric H, Shane R, Andrew M, Amanda R, Kevin E, Stephanie K, Jor-El, Jam and J, Leanne J, Luna R, Mike F, Stone H, Brian L, Jules M, Kendall Lowell, Jessica P, Lowercase Kyle F, Marisol P, Kylie J, Brian A,
that's good.
Ashley F, Marion Luis L, Romeo, the band, Frank B, Jen T, Nikki L, April R, Randy S, JDW, Oral P.
Remember that toothbrush? Oral B.
Yeah, but I've never seen this name before. Oral?
Oral P. Maybe it's Oral.
Oral. Okay, Ginger Somniac, Rachel D, Melissa H, Nick W, Stephanie and Evan, Charlene A, Don G, and Jenny B.
We love you. That's for sure. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you more than you know. So from Michael Rosenbaum here in the Hollywood Hills of Hollywood, California.
I'm Bryce.
It's just Bryce, baby.
In the same place, obviously.
You are. A little wave to the camera. We love you. Thanks for listening. And big episode coming up next week. You do not want to miss it. If you like movies like The Matrix, if you like movies like Bill and Ted, if you like a movie called Sweet November that I was in with him, this person, and his band's here too. So you might want to stick around. Be good to yourself. We'll see you next week.
Mm-hmm. The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now, here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.